This is A Story of Sorts, the podcast mostly about bookish stuff. Hello everyone, Karina here. On this episode we have Senia, author of the blog Hudfinsom Asia and social media manager at Hudfinsom Asia Consulting. Senia talks about her experience living in the Netherlands, her love for interior design and renovation, and she gives some tips on how to grow a social media presence and a community online. Have a listen. Senia, thank you so much for accepting my invitation to come to the podcast.
Yeah, of course.
I want to get you to know your work a bit more, but as an immigrant myself, I'm also curious to know about your move to the Netherlands and your life here. Can you talk a little about yourself and what you do? Who is Senia, you would say?
Who is Senia? Wow, that's such a difficult question. So I am originally from Finland. I have been living in the Netherlands for 5 years. I got married this year. I have two cats. I love reading. I love writing. I love playing video games. I love watching Netflix. I love a good drink with friends. I'm trying to think, who am I? Yeah, I love all kinds of pretty things, from fashion to interior decor to art. So I'm a very visual person as well. So yeah, those are the things that kind of keep me busy and going, especially in these times.
And do you want to talk about why you decided to move to the Netherlands?
Yeah, sure. So that was my then boyfriend. We had been at that point we had been in a long distance relationship for 4 years. We met when we were very young, and the time became kind of to think about, okay, so what next? Where are we going? Neither of us wanted to do more long distance relationship because it's hard. So we have to start thinking about, okay, do I move to the Netherlands or does he move to Finland? And he then got offered a permanent position at his job and a bit of a promotion because his boss did not want him to leave. So then it kind of became quite an easy decision because, yeah, he could get a mortgage, he could buy a house, all kinds of new things opened up for us here that wouldn't have been possible in Finland because we would have both been students. And for me to move here and become a student here, it was a lot easier. So that's how we ended up in the Netherlands. And now it's been over 5 years and I still like it a lot.
And do you miss a lot of things about Finland?
I do, especially these days with the pandemic. I miss my friends and family. I haven't been able to see them for over a year, almost going a year and a half. So that's been tough. But just about Finland, I do miss the nature because it's a large country with a lot of nature, and the Netherlands is quite a small, packed country with, there are some forests and there are some nice natural parks, but it's not a lot compared with Finland, where it's like you can literally get lost in the wilderness and nobody will find you.
did you camp a lot there in Finland? Do you guys hike a lot as well?
So I was never the outdoorsy type, so it's one of those things that you kind of realize that you won't miss it until you really have to miss it. So in Finland, I was never really the outdoorsy type. But my grandparents, they have a second house up in Lapland. So I would try to visit there. And then we would go berry picking. We would go just like hiking in the nature, set up a campfire, roast some sausages, make some coffee, and just enjoy the beautiful nature. I usually always bring my camera because I love taking pictures. So that's kind of my way of enjoying the nature, and I do miss it here.
It's more like city living.
Yeah, in general. Definitely. I mean, there are some beautiful beaches, and I love the Dutch beaches here, the seaside. So that makes me happy. Unfortunately, I don't live right next to the beach, so especially this year, it has been very hard to get out there and kind of
as the
Dutch
summer,
say. Yeah,
it was packed, and
it was so packed. I went once, and bad idea.
everybody was kind of enjoying the fact that they were still allowed to go,
So when you get there, it's like, wow, now I can't enjoy it anymore because obviously everybody had the same idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Felt that a lot because this summer I also felt like I really want to go swimming, which is something that mm-hmm. I usually wouldn't feel because I could do it. And this year I couldn't do it anymore. And with the heat was, that was a tough bit.
Yeah.
And is there anything about Finland that you really don't miss, that you kind of like enjoy more here in the Netherlands than there?
Yeah, good question. I think for me, I don't miss some of the Finnish mentality. I don't miss kind mm-hmm. of the fact that there it's very much about like your job is your whole identity and you have to be successful. And there's a whole like drive to achieve things that kind of is more in balance. Here in the Netherlands, Finland is more work, work, work. And then mm-hmm. once a week, you might let it loose and relax. Here it's more like you have a better balance. On
day
things.
By day, you get to
day
enjoy a
day.
Little bit the days.
Exactly. And like, I always love to see like less so this year, but like normally, whenever the sun is out, people will leave work early and go sit on the terraces and just kind of like they seize the moment and enjoy the day. And I love that. And Finland doesn't really have that because obviously the climate is very different. The mentality is very different. It's a lot about hard work, survival. And I don't miss that. I like my balance of life here better than I did in Finland.
Do you think people are also more social here than in Finland? Because people talk a lot about, there's a big difference because I think someone that comes, for example, from Portugal and then comes here kind of feels that people aren't as open, which I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, to be honest.
Yeah.
But do you think there is like also that feeling from here to Finland that is like even less social there, even more difficult there to socialize?
It's different social, so I would say that on the surface, people are definitely more, kind of elusive. They won't really talk to strangers unless they have a good reason. And I think I said it to someone, like the Finnish ideal for existing is kind of existing next to each other without bothering each other a lot. So, it's a lot more private. But that said, in Finland, once you become friends with someone, you are family. Mm-hmm. Like the smaller circle is so tight and there's a lot of loyalty there. There's like they will treat you as family. So it's kind of in Finland, it's more like there's none of that super casual friendship stuff that is more common here as well. Like, mm-hmm. Having good acquaintances is not so it's not a thing. You're either you're good friends or you're on polite terms. There's not a lot of middle ground there.
Okay, so when you have like a tight circle, it's really tight. And yeah. Otherwise, you really just know the person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like I always find curious, like the way that that people kind of see that, because there's always a lot of people who need that sense of community again, but from the neighbors. Not like from the community that you build, but from the neighbors. And I think, I don't know, maybe this is the way that I grew up, but I kind of feel that sometimes that can be a bit annoying when people don't know the boundaries.
Yeah.
Which yes. I think a lot of people find it weird that I see things a bit in that pessimist way. But when you grow up in a certain way, you kind of want your distance from the neighbors.
Yeah, so getting to know neighbors for a Finnish person is like the worst nightmare. So it's like, you just want to live beside one another. And if there's anything you need, then obviously everyone is willing to help. So that's another thing about Finland is like you can always walk up to people and say like, look, I need help. And people will help because that's what, as a society that grew into a country that is very cold, doesn't really grow a lot of it doesn't have a lot of natural resources, a harsh climate, that's what was needed. Like you had to survive and you had to rely on other people. So there is that big sense of just looking at the Finnish society, it's very, and politics, it's very much the social democrat, the welfare society has been you know, there from the very start when Finland became independent. And we do take care of one another, but then it doesn't necessarily translate into like the interpersonal relationships all that much, because why would you talk to someone who's not your friend?
Yeah.
So there's a whole, it's very kind of complicated, and a lot of people don't get to see that when they go to Finland or even live there for a longer period. Like, they don't get to see that. They just think that Finnish people are standoffish and cold, but there's a whole lot of warmth underneath that often gets kind of ignored.
That's good. So yeah, it's, you don't have to be friends to help each other. That's also a nice thing.
Exactly. I
mean,
yeah,
doesn't mean that people are not helpful.
Yeah.
What about the Netherlands? What can you kind of see something that you, I really really like this? Like, this is probably the thing I like the most, and this is probably the thing I like less, even without relating it to Finland.
Yeah. So what I like about the Netherlands is, and it's also one of the things I hate about the Netherlands. So it's kind of a I have a love-hate relationship with it. Is that people are so pragmatic. It's nice about the good things that they're being super pragmatic and like live and let live. But at the same time, it can get very annoying with things like the COVID, when people are like, well, they're not rules, they're just recommendations, and people will do their own thing, and kind of laissez-faire attitude that people have is nice in good times. Mm-hmm. It's less nice in when shit hits the fan, basically. Yeah. Like, yeah.
When things need to be done and followed.
Yeah.
So. And the thing you like the most?
The thing I like the most about the Netherlands is, I think it's just feeling free, kind of to do my own thing. There are less expectations of what one should be doing. And perhaps that's because I'm an immigrant myself, and I don't have that strict social unwritten rule system that perhaps a Dutch person would have from their family. But I just feel more free to make my own decisions, make my own life choices, and follow my own path. And yeah, that's for me. The Netherlands is more freedom, and I can breathe easier in certain ways.
You have a blog as well, it's Finsemeisje.
Yes. Yes.
But that blog started out while you were still living in Utrecht, right? If I followed you a bit later, like when I followed you, you were already at Finsemeisje. But I think I followed you right at the time when you were changing that, because I still got one post or another of you explaining why the change in name.
Yeah.
And you have now also moved to another city. So you decided to renew the blog because you moved out of Utrecht. And the old blog was mostly about renovating a house in Utrecht. Can you tell us a bit about it? About like your first experience with starting a blog for this specific theme and everything around it?
Yeah, so I have been blogging on and off, I think, since 2008, I would say.
That's a long time.
That's a long time. So I first started on Blogspot taking like mirror selfies and calling it a fashion blog. So I've gone through a lot of different themes over the years. And I knew that when I moved to the Netherlands, which was when I started my blog for our house in Utrecht, I knew that I needed some kind of a creative outlet, because I knew that in the beginning I necessarily wouldn't have like my own community, my friends. Mm-hmm. So my blog would have to serve as a sort of outlet for all of like stuff that I want to discuss. Yeah. Like, obviously I would still have my friends in Finland, but yeah, it's just nice to have a diary, to have people read it and maybe comment on it, and just sharing the process. So yeah, I was blogging for a while, but I am not a very consistent blogger, in the sense like even my Finsemeisje blog hasn't been updated in over a year and a half, because I've been busy with other things. So it's mostly moved to Instagram for me, because it's easier to do.
I kind of have the feeling that a lot of people did that, because I also I followed your blog because I myself had a blog, and then I kind of stopped. But then I was like, it's fine, because I can still follow the people that I was following via, for me, it was WordPress, on Instagram, and it's a lot faster to just make a post. It's so much quicker.
Exactly. And you can still do that, and you can still have the connection that you would have. Actually, you could have a better connection with your readers on Instagram. Obviously, it doesn't give you quite the same platform if you have to write like long texts. So my blog still exists. I may get back to it eventually or not, but it's still there. Like, I still love to share my experiences, not just about the renovating, but also just about living in the Netherlands and kind of just my life, because I find other people and looking into their lives and what they share, I find that so inspiring. So I'm like, if I can inspire someone out there, then great. And if not, then people can follow my daily blabberings.
Of course. And then you also get to connect with other people as well, because I'm pretty certain a lot of people now are also following the blogs more for the personal content in a sense, like for seeing that person and interacting with that person more than really reading the blog posts, I think, unless you're searching for something very specific online that you want to learn to do.
Yeah,
I think it's a bit like, and I find it very fun, like, for me personally, because I think it's a bit silly to say that, because I spend so much time online, and the time that I spend online, I could also spend it on WordPress checking blogs.
Yeah.
But it's so much faster to just pick up my phone and like once or twice a day and scroll a little bit and get the same almost information. And I kind of get the feeling that you really like renovating. Which for me is amazing, because I've been meaning to paint the walls here in my house for a year and I just can't get the energy to let's do this. So I'm very, very curious as where, you know, where that spirit to renovate comes from, and where you find the energy and the inspiration for it.
So the kind of the drive to renovate, it started actually with my husband's family. They are very hands-on, they are very creative, they have the skill, and they've always done it. So I've mostly all my life I've lived in like apartments where things are already done, and you maybe pick a color for the wall and you decorate it, you don't necessarily renovate. So for me, the idea originally to kind of go for a complete fixer-upper apartment and just kind of do it all yourself, it seemed very interesting and also absolutely terrifying. So I was lucky with Utrecht in a sense that like my husband, then boyfriend, he started with the renovations already before I had moved to the Netherlands. So he had been busy for a few months with his family, making it livable. And we still had to stay at his grandparents, who were super kind to host us for a couple of months before we could move in.
Yeah.
But I was glad to have missed most of it, because I am not I'm not very hands-on. I can't do most of the stuff. However, I'm the one who will kind of see how it will look at the end.
So it's more the design and what fits together and colors and
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly. And then I will pitch the idea to my husband. And he is actually like, many people are like, oh, you must be making all the decisions about the house because you're a woman and, you know, the decorating and stuff, which is kind of the old fashioned idea. But that's not true in our case. Sure, I have more of a vision about certain things. And then my husband is happy enough to let me have that. But he also has very strong opinions. And fortunately, they align quite well. So we're able to kind of find the perfect middle ground for how the house should look. But yeah, he's definitely the one who executes it. I have an idea and I go with, and it's so often that I just go to him like, so I was thinking, and he already goes like, oh no, what now? What did you think? And I'm like, well, I saw this picture. I had this idea. And he's like, okay, I guess we're going to Hama or Praxis next.
So, but he always is always kind of happy to get his hands on the work.
He's quite happy to do that. Obviously, he works full time. So, and he does everything himself. So we haven't ever really worked with contractors, only for like small things. We've hired other professionals, and his family has helped a lot, but all the rest he does himself. So for example, now we've been living in our current apartment, which was also a complete fixer-upper. It hadn't been renovated since the 70s. Every everything needed to be redone. We've been going at it for 2 years now, and it's still not done. But it's also kind of like what you said about like wanting to paint a wall for a year. It's hard to find that energy in your daily life. But then when you do have that energy, you just need to tackle it. And sometimes you need a wife who is done with, like, who is just done looking at certain wall not being done. And then just goes like, hey, I think we should do that next weekend. so we try to kind of keep each other going at, with it as well, without obviously going overboard, because nobody wants to be burnt out.
No.
So it's a balance. And it's hard to find. And it's a process that takes time.
Nobody wants to be told we have to do it now, because then you really don't feel like doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
I had like here a question, as if you would like, what you would recommend to someone who would like to start renovating, and any resources that you would share. I don't know if it's if you have any tips or not, since you're more on the design side.
Yeah, I would say, just from my own experience, do not move in while you're renovating. If you can help it, do not move into the house while you're renovating it until it's done. Because when you do that, you will lose the momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So then you will notice that, okay, things will start to take a long time to get done. So if you want to live in a finished house, do not move into it until it is finished.
Okay.
Another one is just kind of... Well, I know that my husband, he watches a lot of YouTube videos, just looking, and there are so many professionals out there who are sharing their knowledge, sharing their skills, and teaching people on YouTube. And those are great resources to look into. However, do not get overconfident and think that you can do something just because you watched a YouTube video. Like, there, do consider whether or not it is not worth it to invest the money in getting a real professional to do it, because you'll usually end up being happier with the end result. Like, we've had a few mishaps, nothing serious, but just a few mishaps where we both admit, like, okay, it would have been better to hire a professional to do it. It would have cost us a bit more, but it would have saved us a lot of energy and stress.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even if you're planning to do most of it yourself, don't be afraid to rely on professionals if that's in your budget.
Great. And you have also started a business this year, a company called Finsumatia Consulting.
Yes.
And why did you decide to go on and offer consulting on your own? Because you're, if I'm correct, your degree is also related to the same. Right. You started you were working for other companies, et cetera, like that. And now you just decided to go a bit on your own as well. And why did you decide to do that? And what are your goals for the company?
Yeah. So it was a bit of a combination of, 2020, and also just feeling like it was the time to do something else, because I have been working for others for several years already, and I just felt like it was not giving me all the opportunities that I wanted. It was not giving me the freedom to do what I wanted. So then with 2020 happening, and it just seemed like the most chaotic but also the perfect moment to try something completely new, because if it doesn't work out, I can always go back to working for companies. I have the skills still, that doesn't go anywhere. I keep on improving my skills. So it just seemed like a crazy leap of faith, but I'm glad that I did it. I'm still very much in the early stages of setting up my company, looking for clients, but I am currently doing social media consulting largely for smaller companies, smaller entrepreneurs. And kind of my goal is to not give them the ready-made answers, but to really teach them how to find those answers themselves. And I'm guiding them on that journey. I am helping them get that knowledge themselves and showing them how to do it. But also I want them to be, because I know how hard it is to set up your own company, and you don't have the budget to do all these big investments every month, and you need to be self-reliant as well. And social media is such an important part of being able to market your business, especially when you don't have a big marketing budget. And it can be done without big budgets and big, you know, spending a lot of money on Facebook ads. So I just want to show as many people as I can how to do it and how they can get started. And then eventually when they do have a bigger budget, they can always hire someone else to do it, but also because they know what is involved, they will be smarter about who to hire to do that for them. Because I also see there are so many social media entrepreneurs out there who do an amazing job, but then it's a bit of a wild field, is that there are a lot of cowboys out there who say that they can do certain things, but then they don't deliver results. So by knowing what is involved, people can know to ask the right questions when they are hiring someone. So I'm really happy that I can kind of help them on that path. And now I am currently, besides doing one-on-one consulting, I'm setting up a web workshop that people can participate in. It's still very much under construction. Hopefully when this podcast airs, it will be out there either in like bi-monthly sessions with me doing it live, or you can download the workshop and do it by yourself. So that's what I'm working on right now. And kind of the bigger overarching goal for my business is just to, for myself, it's to have the freedom to do what I'm good at, but also the freedom to do, just have more of a balance as well. Just be able to set my own schedule and all of that, like the entrepreneurial dream.
Of course, to kind of be your own boss, but also to be able to choose when to work.
Yes, and to, obviously, like financially, obviously have enough to live off of.
Because I do have this feeling that, and it's something that we keep hearing, and I think it's very correct, that it doesn't really matter if you have 100,000 followers and then just two people talk to you. You might as well just have 20 followers and have them all talking to you and interacting with you. Because I still find it a bit strange when I try to, but I know not everybody is very, it's on social media, but I find it strange when I try to find a company that has like a logo, a name, etc. And then they're not on social media, like on Instagram. So I I kind of have to search to contact them. I find it nowadays like that it's a bit weird that people don't see the strength of just being able to be contacted so directly, because sometimes I will just give up. Like if I don't find immediately a contact, like a page, especially on Instagram or Facebook, I'm like just nah.
And that's the thing. It's like that's what I do as well. And like you said, a lot of people do, especially people our age. And it's so important to have your social media presence. And it doesn't have to be 100,000 followers. You just need to exist there and you need to have it set up correctly. But I think a lot of smaller businesses are afraid of how much work it's going to be for them. Mm-hmm. And especially if they're working by themselves and, you know, just started, it can get very overwhelming. So that's also why I wanted to focus on the smaller businesses, because I know for them it is so vital to have that. But it's also like the way that my vision for social media and social media marketing is that you can do a lot with very little. You just need to make it realistic for yourself and focus on quality over quantity and forget about those kind of the traditional ideas of like, I just need to have 100,000 followers and then people will start storming to my door. That's not how it works. That is, like you said, if you have 100,000 followers and two people only are talking to you, then, you know, that doesn't work. It shouldn't matter how many followers you have. It should matter who your followers are. So I really, what I do is just have a lot more strategic look into it. Like I don't focus on the vanity metrics like follower numbers or even to a degree likes and all of that. Like engagement is an important indicator in how successful your posts are. But if you are getting likes from the wrong people who will never actually buy into your business or buy your services, buy your products, then that doesn't matter. Like you can have 100,000 likes, but if it's all from the wrong people, then you're not doing great. I think that's one of the things that I really want people to take from social media, is that the numbers are there for your vanity. The numbers are there to lure you to spend more time on the platform. The numbers are addictive. That is how the platform was designed. But you can still use the tool. Like, just because it's an illusion in many ways doesn't mean that it's not a good tool for your business. Mm-hmm. There are just things that you need to kind of deconstruct for yourself, and then you can see the true value and you will know how to use it to your benefit. And it's really like what I tell a lot of the people I talk to is like, forget that it's super technical, forget that it's on social media, just consider it the same way as you would if you were running a brick and mortar store and mm-hmm. people were coming into your shop and you were talking to them face to face. It's social media, and we need to focus more on the social part of it rather than the media part of it.
That's very interesting take. Like you said that you, like the pandemic influenced your decision to start off your business. And do you feel more people that that's happening to a lot more people? Have you felt like some kind of affluence of people starting their businesses now?
Yes, and it has a few reasons. One of them is like the pandemic forces us to really look at our own lives and consider what makes us happy, what is truly important. Do I want to stay in my job anymore, or do I want to kind of jump into it and do my own thing? And another one is that sadly, a lot of people are losing their jobs because of the pandemic is hitting big businesses very hard. So it's both kind of born out of necessity and also the inspiration that this year has given, or the illumination that this year has given to a lot of people. So yeah, I am sure I'm not alone in that. For me, it was a bit of both. Yeah.
Something so you just, wanted already and just the opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, I'm not sure if what I'm going to ask you is fair or not, because I had asked like three tips that you can give people regarding social media, or, and it can be social media strategy or just general tips. Because I know like if this is your job, so I don't want to.
Yeah, but no, it's okay. And I can summarize because I feel like I already gave some tips there. So don't care about the number of followers, care about who your followers are. Go through your follower list, see who's there. Do they match who you want them to be? Like if you have a blog, are they your ideal reader, or are they just some random people who followed you for no good reason? Are they people who don't even speak the language that you're writing in? Mm-hmm. Remove those followers. You don't need them. And at the same time, if you see that there are followers who do match your ideal follower or your ideal client perfectly, go ahead and reach out to them. Start a conversation. Go and like their posts. Go and react to their posts. Just start that online relationship with them, because it's all about that. The algorithm on Instagram supports that. And that way you will have a much healthier audience base, even if it's smaller. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you don't need all those people who are just there to kind of make you feel better about yourself having so many followers, because it's vanity. It's vanity metrics. That's what I call them. And a lot of people call them that, but it's true. And it will hurt for a bit when you remove those followers and you go back and you're just like, oh my God, what have I done? And will people think that I'm respectable, or will people take me seriously now because I have lesser followers? But I think 2020 and going forward, it's less about having a lot of followers, because you can buy followers for $5 and you can have as many as you want. Mm-hmm. But it's not real. It's fake. It's an illusion. So focus on the real core thing, which is the relationships that you have with your audience. And to that point, try to learn from your audience. Go and look at what they're doing, what they're posting, who they're following, and use that information to influence your content. Try to tailor your content to fit your audience's needs and interests, because that way people are more likely to interact with it. So a lot of companies will think that they can just preach their own thing and just talk about their products all the time, and that's all they need to do, and that's but it's not. It should always start with your audience, who you're talking to, and you need to just make your message tailored to them, and only then will they listen.
Those are really good tips. And it's stuff that we really don't think about as like regular users, especially if you don't like have a business or anything.
Yeah.
You don't really think deep about it, because we kind of think, oh, we have this idea of what may work or not. But there are so many things that we don't come across. And until we come across that, it's really just like when we come across it, it's like, oh, yeah, this makes a lot of sense, because everybody has like their, I forgot to how exactly you call it, but like the focus audience. But you also have to go to them, not just try to call them to, like, you have to call them to you by going to them, I guess.
Yeah, it's a two-way street, and especially on social media, it's not just broadcasting your message out there and hoping that people will hit like. That's not how it works. That's not how it has worked ever in the history of human relationships. You need to, you need to also reach out, you need to show interest, and you need to kind of build your community. And it works both for bloggers who will need an engaged audience, especially on Instagram, if they want to monetize their Instagram, they do need that audience to be really engaged and interested. Mm-hmm. And for companies who want the, or businesses who want the people to buy something from them or want to start using their services, people are more likely to do that if they like you. And to make them like you, you need to also show that you're interested in them and have that relationship with them.
Mm-hmm. So when I invited you to come to the podcast, and I was kind of thinking exactly about what to ask you. You talked that one of the most important things for you was the sense of community. Would you mind elaborating on that a bit?
So pretty much everything I do ends up coming to community. So it's, well, when I started my blog, it was also about finding my own community, especially moving to a new country where you don't know a lot of people and you don't necessarily want to rely on your partner's friends and family to be your community. You want to build your own. This day and age, a blog or social media is such a great way to do that. So that's something for if you are moving somewhere, just like get out there and find that community, build that community. And then in my business, I see that community building is absolutely the key to, for small businesses, for small entrepreneurs who don't have the money to put into advertising a lot. That's when you build your community. That's when you start building word of mouth. That's when you start to build your loyal audience who are more likely to recommend you to other people. Mm-hmm. So it, like, all of it revolves around community. And yeah, so that's why I think I mentioned community earlier, because especially this year, I think a lot of people need a community. A lot of people are turning online for those communities. So this, if there ever was a time for bloggers, for people making podcasts, for people talking about certain topics, to build those communities around the topic, this was it. Like this is your chance to really go and do it.
That's a really nice message as well for this year, especially for people who feel lonely and they don't really know where to begin, but they also think that online is not, I don't know, not as valid. Since sometimes people have this feeling that others will not want to reach out as much if it's online.
Yeah, I think that's a very common misconception that people have, is that online is not as valid. But then again, I would say so many of my friendships, I met my husband online, and you know, it's online today is just as real as real life. And I would say that today is even more important, because that's where you can reach people now. You can't meet up in person. Go online, reach out to the people there, and not just your friends, because obviously great if you can, but don't be afraid of joining in on the conversation that someone has on their Instagram. Like, you can make such great friends. And I would say that most of the friends I have here in the Netherlands, I have made through Instagram, which sounds weird and funny, but you know, that's just how it works these days. You can find people with the same interests and you can talk to them on a very kind of low, it's not a massive step to talk to them. You just need to put in a comment, send them a message, and then you can get into a conversation. And before you know it, you have a bunch of new friends.
Yeah, especially if, you know, like you've all moved to the country at some point, you will have at least something in common to talk about. And most people who move here, they're also, I think they will be open to talk to you because they're also getting to know other people.
So I definitely want to encourage people to really, even if it's out of your comfort zone, get out of your comfort zone and just reach out to people and start making those connections and build your own community. And whether your community is 3 people or 20, then, you know, that's up to you. But just kind of don't sit there thinking that nobody wants to hear from you or that, you know, what you have to say doesn't matter, because there are people who definitely want to hear it, definitely want to hear from you. And social media is a great way and a great place to do it.
And it's so much easier, I think, to be turned down online than face to face.
Yes.
There isn't a lot to, if they don't say anything, you just move on to the next person. Or like, it's I think it's a lot easier than to just approach someone face to face and try to make friends.
Absolutely. And that's something that I also want to remind people, is that things on social media, you should try and not take it personally, because your value doesn't lie in your number of followers or the number of comments you get. And if someone doesn't reply to your message, there are probably 1,000 reasons why they didn't do that. And I can assure you that most of it is not, it has nothing to do with you. So I see that a lot of people get very discouraged in the beginning when they start with social media, start with their accounts, start with their blogs, and they don't get a reaction immediately. But these things take time. So just focus on that, reach out to other people, and eventually it will come. It's not like that, you just have to find the right people, and then you have your community.
Mm-hmm. And what's next? Do you have any plans or projects for next year?
So we still are hoping that we will eventually get to celebrate our wedding, which we had to cancel twice this year.
Oh, yes.
Well, I'm not the only one. So that's a hope for next year. Obviously growing my own business, we want to finish our renovations here and then see if we stay here or do we take on another project.
Are you both working remotely?
No, my husband, he is still working because he's in a business where he has to work on location. Mm-hmm. So he cannot have his tools at home and work from here, which is kind of nice because it still gives me the space to work in my own space.
Yeah.
On my business. And then I think at this point, I'm very hesitant to make any grand plans for next year. Mm-hmm. And I'm really trying to, and this is coming from someone who used to plan everything and make several backup plans. So this year has definitely taught me that no matter how much you plan, it's still best to take it day by day and see what happens and not get too hung up on your plans. Because who knows, maybe there's a global pandemic that will ruin all your plans.
Who would have known? But it's here.
Yeah.
And it's lasting longer than I think most people hoped for. So, and my last question, because this is a podcast mostly about bookish stuff, I have to ask you for some book recommendations. And I ask for an all-time favorite book and a book you would recommend right now. And why?
Gosh, an all-time favorite book, that's always one of the hardest questions anyone ever asked me, because I've read so many good books in my life.
It can be more than one, if you want to bring up more than one, that's fine, because I should be the first to know that how difficult that question is.
So I really think, like, books that have had a huge impact on me, most lately it was The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. That, I mean, it was for many people, but for me, it was really an eye-opener in, like, just gave me a new perspective on how I can live my life and react to things. Then I've always, always loved Lord of the Rings, the whole Tolkien world. It's always been super, just one of my favorites. And as a kid, I used to love Anne of Green Gables, the series, the book series. I loved it so much.
Did you watch the Netflix series? Because I haven't read the book, but I watched the series.
I struggled with it because I have read the books, and the books are amazing. And the series just it takes it to a whole new tangent, which I just, it wasn't for me.
Yeah, I really loved it. But again, I don't have the comparison with the books. I really think they tackled very important issues right now that were not, you know, that everybody wasn't talking about back then when the books were written.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious about the
book. Yeah, the books were, the focus was very different because I did start to watch the series and the first season, I liked the vibe. It was still quite same to the books. The second season, it started to go on very different tangents. And while I understand that there's a need to translate the stories and the vibe to, you know, current day situation and discuss mm-hmm. those topics as well, it did take away, it just, for me, the difference was too jarring.
Yeah.
Just like how they changed the characters so much. Like, I personally would have preferred if they had introduced new characters to the story that did those storylines rather than completely change the existing characters from the books. That was just, for me, it was too different.
Yeah, because we get like we have this feeling for the characters. It's and when they change it a lot, even like, again, I don't have the relation between the book and the series because I've only watched the series. But I think everybody, when they read a book and then they know they are going to turn it into a movie, there's always the feeling of I'm excited for this, but I'm fearful of what they're going to do with my favorite books.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Very curious. It's very nice to see that vision from it.
Yeah. And then books that people should be reading now. Well, I still think if you haven't read The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, you definitely should, especially this year. And then if you are interested in marketing, This Is Marketing by Seth Godin is it's a classic. You should read it. Like, it will explain. And his style of writing is not quite so academic, so it's easy to get into even if you're not a marketing professional, but it will just kind of take away some of the mystique that is often surrounding marketing. And even if you're not going to do marketing yourself, it will help you to kind of recognize what are some of the things that companies are using to trigger you to do things. So it's just interesting to read even if you're not into marketing.
Just in a user perspective.
Yeah.
Don't let the brand fool you.
Exactly. Just like I mean, I have worked in marketing. Obviously, I want people to be triggered to do certain things, but I am still wholeheartedly for the people to make educated decisions and also to understand what is being done, because it's not just the same kind of triggers are being used by not just marketing, but it's also being used in media. It's also being used by many other instances. So it's useful to know them, be aware of them, and then you can decide for yourself, like, okay, I know what they want me to do. Do I want to do it myself?
Mm-hmm. Okay, very well.
So definitely an interesting book to read.
Great. And where can people find you on social media?
On Instagram, I am, for just my basic blogging Instagram, it's hetfinsemeisje. And then for my business, if you need social media help, hetfinsemeisje consulting.
Thank you so much, Sanja, for your time and for coming to the podcast.
Of course, thanks for having me.
You can access today's show's notes via my pod page, which you can find along with all of my social media links at linktree.com/Karina Pereira. For specific podcast links, check linktree.com/A Story of Sorts. In there, you'll also find a link to A Story of Sorts playlist available on Libre.fm, containing the audiobooks recommended by our guests, which will be updated as the show progresses. If you'd like to give Libre.fm a try, you can use the code A Story of Sorts at checkout to get 2 books for the price of 1. This offer is valid for new Libre.fm members in the US and Canada. Libre.fm is an audiobook platform which allows you to buy audiobooks directly from an indie bookstore. Check them out. If you have enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting A Story of Sorts on Patreon. Patreon is a platform which allows you to contribute monthly to the podcast in exchange for extra content, such as early access to episodes, a shout-out at the end of an episode and on Instagram, and choosing a theme for me to talk about on the podcast. You can become a patron at patreon.com/astoryofsorts. I'd also be very grateful if you would simply leave a review and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. I'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. I'll talk to you then, and thank you for listening.